Blog Talk Radio.
Breaking through the norm, and we're realizing and internalizing we have a divine image to help us get out in scrimmage. Greetings and blessings, blessings and greetings, blessed souls. We're live because we're marrying the Selah in this most existential of moments, connecting to eternity. The Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of life, and Torah Rachem, instructions of mercies. You're now tuned into Blog Talk Radio, and we humbly assert we are the higher inner frequency of Blog Talk Radio. We call ourselves Soul Class. This happens to be Soul Class 737 in conversation with Jerome Sage Butler, Part 8. Blessed is our Creator, Baruch Hashem, Shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the entire human family experience. That's 7+ billion human beings gleaming and streaming into this blessed creation. This is Anti-Eugenics Torah Radio. With Creator's help, we're now broadcasting live on November 3rd. It's now 11:32 a.m., live from Turtle Island, equals USA, equals AKA Unified Soul Actualization, corresponding to, I believe it's either 10:30 in Jamaica time from the Diamond of the Caribbean. We plan on speaking with co-host, prolific lecturer, Jerome Sage Butler, who dwells within his spiritual, cognitive, emotional realm, coin-promoting Chief of Life Values. Butler is driven to tap into his deep ancestral wellsprings, a divine source correlating, relating and developing a dialogue with other human souls, intended to give human dialogue towards analyzing the moral and ethical nature we as human beings are well advised to explore. Program content will focus on empowering a woman in order to strengthen a man, and a whole lot more. As well, Butler will discuss whatever he thinks is worth our while to consider and meditate upon. The call number is 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones in a peaceful and pleasant manner. The opening segue song is by a good brother by the name of Levi Rabin, who actually wrote this song in tribute to a friend of his, Yeshua Raphael Halevi Ben Yocheved, who had been in the hospital that particular time 2 years ago, and this fighting for his life. And Levi Rabin wrote this song that his brother, who he has love for, not should fear, because the Almighty is right there in the middle of that storm. We're going to turn down the music and turn to brother Jerome Sage Butler, live, I believe, from the St. Andrew's Parish in Jamaica. Good morning, Jerome.
Blessings and great rising to you, Brother Don, and to the whole of Turtle Island, indeed, the whole of Terra Firma, the living cosmos. We give thanks, you know. It's beautiful to be here once more, you know, sharing and interacting in the spirit of unified soul experience, you know. We give thanks and blessings, you know. Braka, braka.
Amen. But Jerome says we have a very special guest, a good friend of mine for the past 6+ years. He was involved in the music business. He is an astute graphic artist who has an online business. And I'm hoping in the up until about 11:55 that you two will take care of the main portion of the dialogue. I'll just be kind of like the background, to maybe ask a question, make a comment. This is Rob Walker. Rob, I'd like to introduce you, Jerome Sage Butler from the St. Andrew's Parish of Jamaica.
Greetings, Jerome. How are you, sir?
I'm good. And how are you, Brother Rob?
Excellent, excellent. Good to be on with you this morning. I've heard some amazing things about you, so I'm looking forward to an inspiring conversation.
Divinely thankful, brother. Likewise, as well, too. Blessings to you, and, you know, let's see, you know, what meat, you know, is in the bones of this good experience.
Amen.
And Drum Sage, don't be surprised. I'm the one who put in the good word about you. Okay, gentlemen, since you both have been, Robert, you've been in the music industry. Jerome, you're in the middle of the music industry. I'd like to share with something based on a verse in the Torah, which is in Genesis, which talked about in chapter 4, verse 21, that his brother's name was Yuval. He was the forerunner of all those who play the harp and flute. And commenting on this verse, Lubavitch Rebbe, Menachem Mendel Schneerson, talked about the transformative power of music is well known. Music can create an environment, put us in the mind, or take us out of the environment we were previously in, you know, cognitively, spiritually, emotionally, uplift us. There's music that can deject us, it can refine us and profane us. It is one of the quickest ways for us to lose our self-awareness as we become absorbed in the experience. This loss of self temporarily wipes out our ego, therefore opening us up to new insight. It is therefore essential that we all become musical connoisseurs, developing a finely honed sensitivity to what types of music enhance our divine consciousness and what types are detrimental to it. Harnessing the power of music, both in our personal and communal lives, can be an effective tool in promoting spiritual growth. Before I go to you, Robert, and then you, Jerome, I just want to mention that the Rambam writes in the talking about the instructions about how does one prepare for prophecy, music is an integral component in preparing the individual to sensitize him, herself, or herself to get the prophetic spirit. We'll turn to Robert and then Jerome. Robert,
well,
your take on the elevation of music and its effect on the human being.
Well, I would say, Ashe, amen. For many years, writing music and putting great thought into the poems that became songs, I was forced to reflect on my personal life, personal experiences, upbringing. I am from a single-parent home here in Brooklyn, New York. I'm born in Crown Heights. And, to go back for a moment, my father left when I was about maybe 11 or 12, but he always told me he would leave when I was about 7 or 8 years old. And I couldn't understand it, but I took the pain that I had during that time and I would begin to write songs and I would, attempt to sing. I'm not the greatest singer by any means, but I used those messages that he gave me and reversed them into powerful, positive messages for other people, not to be down, not to be sad, no matter what life brings you. So music is a transformative energy, from Michael Jackson to Beethoven to Andrea Bocelli. You listen to anyone who has a musical gift. And you get lost in the experience of the music, of the melodies, the lyrics, every single instrument that accompanies the vocals, and even for those who don't need an instrument to play, to bring forth great sound, who are a cappella singers, who are most times just amazing vocalists and can take you spiritually to another place. So I would agree that it is something that calms the spirit, calms the soul. Many times when I'm doing housework, I'm listening to music. If I'm washing dishes, if I'm cleaning the toilet, if I'm, in a creative space, if I'm feeling a little bit anxious, it will calm me down. It will center me. It will give me cause to reflect and not take myself so seriously, take everything so seriously. So I would have to agree. That's my take on it. I would agree.
Trouble Sage. On these matters.
Blessings, Robert. I feel what you're saying, deeply. Well, my take on, the elevation of music is, first you can look at what it does in the opposite, in a denigration. You can see wherein, music influences people to do things which is, let's just say, outside of what is the acceptable norm in many contexts, right? It is one of the major influences, right? And so people who have a specific viewpoint or a way of thinking, they tend to have music which appropriates their thinking, right? So denigrated music, and I mean music that really wrecks the unity. So I'm not saying that it's denigrated because it has a different viewpoint. It's denigrated because it wrecks the unity of the soul. It actually basically supports the separation of the individual from the source of its experience and the sustenance of its experience. This is the collective. So there's lots of music which, because of its frequency, its vibration, because that's what it is. It carries dense frequencies, dense vibrations that lowers a person's sensibility. What do I mean? Well, because I'm using the archetype of people who are, let's say, going on their own outcast realities. What it does is it tends to, you know, let them become like numb to other frequency, other parts of life that is not differential based upon opinion. It's just life. And they detach and they get isolated. And the music is one of the major factors that fuels the isolation. It isn't the only factor, but as we're looking at it now, you know, we're putting it in context. The music in its denigrative state manifests in a lower sense of presence, sensibility in individuals. And we're not even talking about dress code, because let's just say people are bright and cheerful in the environment, and the denigrative music tends to make the persons go dark, wear dark color, somber color. They don't match the frequency of what's present. So by looking at the negative, I've clearly established in my thinking and by what I've seen and analyzed, you know, observed through music how people's personalities are affected by it. That's one way I've seen it in so many different contexts. Now, taking that module and looking at, you know, how it really uplifts the individual, just look at how a person's sense of self transforms, number one, when they're beginning to think outside of the context of what they've been living in, especially if they think it doesn't match the true nature of who they are. Music always seems to be one of the biggest catalysts that gets them, you know, inspired to move to that state of presence, that state of actualization. You find that young college students trying to make a clarity of, you know, self-identity, especially in Jamaica. You know, our Brother Dan, we know this, the European culture mixing into, you know, the indigenous culture, and with the mixture of, you know, the Africans who are here, it causes a slight, you know, imbalance in people's self-perception. So music always helps the individual. It's like an integral part of their diet when they are transforming the experience out of what they think is that subjugation into something which they feel is, you know, liberation. And so indeed, the frequencies of such music tend to be filled with more loving aura. The thought processes that are being expressed, those are kind of thoughts. It's like you find that the darker music is usually self-serving and self-seeking, because it usually talks about things that are intrinsic and specific to these isolations, right? But the music which is elevating speaks specifically to the sense of, you know, one's well-being and one's place in things. So you find that when you listen to that music, not just the words I'm talking about, but the frequency of that music, because the words are coming from a state that is a state more at peace, or a state more clarified in the perception of life. So that's my take on music.
Yeah.
And, you know, the efficacy of its experience in our life, you know?
Well, I would say, just to interject briefly, Brother Jerome, so you would say in totality that music has medicinal purposes, if you will. You know?
Well, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I'll agree on that.
Yes, it's healing. And, you know, I mean, you know, being from New York City, growing up in the hip-hop era in the 80s, from, you know, KRS-One to Rakim, to, I mean, every prominent rapper, Big Daddy Kane, most of these rappers talked about their pain. They talked about their struggles growing up. They talked about their environment. They talked about their lack of income. They talked about their lack of love. They talked about police brutality. They talked about the things that they saw that not only made them curious, but also made them sad. And they tried to find a way to take that pain and reverse it, sometimes successfully, sometimes not. But ultimately, what I heard you say so eloquently is that, you know, when music is dark, it speaks specifically to the person or their personal circumstance. And when music is uplifting, it speaks to the broader number of people, the broader number of souls that it affects and touches, which is the greater, you know, that's the one we're looking for, you know, so to speak. So it's my children love hip hop. My children love R&B. And they listen to things that I didn't even put them on to. There's something about my household that, you know, maybe because my wife and I listen to certain things. But I have one particular son who likes, you know, really, you know, the negative hip-hop, you know. And I said, what is it that you find interesting about this music? And he says, well, these are these people's life stories. So I would sit down and listen to the lyrics, and I'm saying, well, does this guy have a Bentley? He goes, no. Does this guy have a mansion? He goes, well, no. Does the guy have $1 million in the bank? He goes, well, no. I said, well, this is not really their life story, you know? And if you listen to what they're saying they want to do to get those things, that isn't a positive thing either. So as you say, you know, certain frequencies darken the spirit. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely correct. It sends the wrong message. It also can make the youth believe that there's an easy or shortcut. There's an easy way to get things that they want, rather than having to work for it or put in the effort. That it should be theirs just by virtue of being alive, which is not true. So that's just comes to share that.
Beautiful, gentlemen.
No,
I'd
I
like
agree.
To interject. Thank you. I think I'm loving this exchange, gentlemen. Since unfortunately Robert is a little constricted his time, I just want to turn to a verse in Proverbs and have you two gentlemen vibe out on it until Robert will hopefully come on in a future program to. Because Jerome Sage, I don't know if you're aware of this, or I think I mentioned to you, that Jerome performs marriages, and there's a couple of experiences I think our listening audience around the world would love to hear. But anyway, this is in the last chapter of Proverbs, chapter 31, verse 30. Charm is false and beauty is futile. A God-fearing woman is to be praised. Now, we're not going to say that it's a sin to be beautiful, because everyone has to look their best. And the type of charm which is false, we're talking about an ancient value where basically in ancient Israelite society, the God-fearing woman, that was her grace. That was her beauty. And if she was physically beauty and she had, emotional charm, cognitive charm, that was wonderful too. But the main charm and beauty, of according to Israelite standards, is the fear of God. That means not to cringe and say, I'm going to get punished, but rather, I don't want to break this relationship. It's also talking about a type of God-fearing which forges a relationship, which we're referring to, according to our oral Torah tradition, is Ruth, who forsake her mother, her ancestors, and her riches, because she came from the upper echelon of Moabite society. She went to the Holy Land and converted to become an Israelite. And through her self-sacrifice, she merited to be the great-grandmother of King David, who stated the Holy One, blessed be He, with songs and praises. So here we see the woman who fears God would produce a great-grandson who would be making music. We've been talking about elevating the soul. Jerome Sage, and then Robert, please, your take on these matters.
You know, it's absolutely, awesome when, like, the biblical, the kind of history and stories and, the things that we've recorded over the years, bear testament, right, to how music, factors into, the human condition, right? Basically, how music basically tells the story of the actual experiences, and then after it is passed, it's a record, it's a preservation of our human history. The very essence of it, it's like a template to maintain the sanctity, of the first cause, It's like in Rastafari, in Jamaican culture, we say music is 1-2, which is the heartbeat, which is, it is life itself. So it is not what it's constructed to be, but the very essence and process of construction itself, So, the biblical resonance again, so the sacredness, of music and its place in our lives, it resonates with me, I can see it manifesting, and I can see practitioners of the creative and especially the musical heart who understand it, using it in a wholesome manner, And, as you mentioned that Robert performed marriages, I was wanting to ask him, how do you perceive a harmonious marriage? Because to how I look at harmony and stuff, I quantify colors and sound to a frequency, to the same spectrum. So, I think, a good marriage is like a interesting piece of choreography, composition between harmony, melody, and silence. So, Robert, how do you see harmony and marriages? Because I want to get there, and I need to go, so tell me about it.
Wow, that's interesting. Are those goats a lamb in the background? That's amazing. That's a beautiful question. I've been married to the same woman for 18 years. We know each other 30 years. And
whoa.
Yeah, so we've been. Thank you, sir. So harmony is patience. Harmony is calm. Harmony is compromise. Not compromising what God tells you to do, but compromising meaning that you give and take. That it's not all of one way at any particular time. My mother used to say, today for you, tomorrow for me. And when a God-fearing woman respects her husband, understands that all that he does for the family dynamic, all that he does for the betterment of the future generations. As you mentioned, Ruth, how, she became the great-grandmother of King David. So it's one of those things where the relationship has to start out that way. It does. I mean, it can evolve into it, but there has to be an understanding from the very beginning. It's like writing a piece of music. You know, you got a guy comes in, he plays the piano. A guy brings in the bass. A guy brings in the strings, and it builds. It builds, and it's over time. It doesn't happen overnight. It is organic, but it takes time for it to. But it's like a piece of sculpture. You have a bust,
mm-hmm.
and before all the details are put into that bust, you really can't tell who the figure is, who the person is.
True,
as you begin to add the details, that's a bust of Don. It's like with music, you know, it builds. Music starts off, it starts very calm, and then it builds to an expected beautiful ending. And it's the same with marriage. A lot of patience, a lot of love, a lot of compromise. And again, not compromising God's will, but compromising meaning that you are willing to give as much as you're willing to take, and sometimes give more than you're willing to take. Women are a gift from God. The Bible calls the woman the helper, but it doesn't mean in a lowly sense. It means that God has given the woman he's given her the information that you need. It's almost a medicinal in a sense, you know. If it's the right woman, I would say if it's the right
Agreed.
Woman, it's a, you know. And that's why you have to tune into God before you get married. You can't get married for vain reasons. It can't be simply lust or she's physically attractive or her body is amazing or whatever. It must be something that you pray about, speak to God about, and agree and be in agreement with God about, because ultimately you're going into covenant not just with her but with God. Recently,
yes.
I did a wedding, and everyone, they were having a great time, and I was asked to bless the food before we began to eat. And before we did so, I said, I want everyone who's married, who's come today to celebrate this couple, to turn to the person, turn to your partner if you've been married 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, and whatever, and just really look intently at the person sitting across from you or next to you, because remember you made an agreement with them also. And I'm interested in knowing whether or not you are still in love with the person as much as you were the day you got married today, or do you still feel the same? Have you been keeping your vows? Have you been keeping the love? Have you been doing all that you can do to honor God's covenant between the two of you, and also honor each other, make each other happy? So often people come to, they go to events, they go to weddings, and they celebrate the new marriage, but they forget that their marriage is still new in the eyes of God as well. Every day is a fresh day for God. So you have to just respect that vow, respect the covenant, and understand that it's a long journey. When I think about a marriage that stood the test of time, I think about Abraham and Sarah, and how, look at all the tumult, look at all the ups and downs, but look what eventually,
true.
Isaac was born and Ishmael was born, and but God kept his promise, and Abraham believed God and was counted to him as righteousness, correct? So, it's for me, just to end it, being married 18 years, I've had to sacrifice a great deal of my energy, my finances, but most of all, my love, and trust that it's going to come back the way I put it out, and it has. It has. So, that's it.
Beautiful, Robert, beautiful. You know, one of the things, as I was listening to you, as I think about the harmonization of, the harmony and the melody make and the silence, God in the silence, the divine intent, the design function, basically coming through, after every sound, you have that silence, so the resonance of a sound can be felt. You understand?
Mm.
So in each experience, right, I've been seeking to find the harmonization where the composition, like the very nature of your life, comes together, in very much the balance between the harmony and the melody, that the good, the bad times, the misunderstandings, the things that a man does instinctively that has been taught into him or trained into him, and vice versa, and the woman that splinters us, that sends us outside of the key of life, outside of that key. So it's like to be attuned to the essence of love, because love is music to me, and the perfect balance of all the frequency, right, in its perfect arrangement and composition. It's a letting go of the external, of all of the dictates of externality, just like in faith, right? To be absorbed into the silence, into where Yahuwah is, into where peace, right? We're an image that is not fashioned by external, but it's fashioned by the similarity in spirit, or the singleness in spirit. But then that, to me, is not philosophical. It is a struggle of the true soul to find its completion, because if, per se, we are halves to a whole, then in finding the other half, in finding a perfect harmonization, we'll make a great composition. We'll call it love. We'll call it our children. You know, and so in empowering the women, you know, it's like reminding them as well as ourselves to be attuned, to be tuned beings, in tune beings with the divine life, you know, which is music itself. So
amen.
God is love. God is also music, you know.
Yes, yes. You said something wonderfully. You said, wow, well said, Brother Jerome. That's beautiful. You made me smile here. Because when I think of my marriage, that's what it feels like to me. That, you know, they're talking about the moment of silence. My wife and I have been married so long that we can be in a room together for an entire day. She could be knitting or reading, and I could be drawing or painting. And we don't have to have a conversation about anything. We just, sometimes we turn to look at each other, we smile,
mm-hmm.
and then we continue what
mm-hmm.
we're doing. I'll get up after an hour or so, do you want a cup of tea? She'll say yes or no. I'll make one for myself, you know, and then she'll, you know, there's an energy that is unspoken. And when the creator's involved, I mean, he's involved in all things. But when your marriage, and you know for sure, is ordained by the creator, there are things that are effortless. It's like playing
Absolutely.
An instrument. It just comes to you naturally. And even in the difficult times, you never get to a breaking point. It's difficult, but it still feels like it's part of his plan. You can feel his presence in your tumult. And
yes, it's worth it.
Yeah, it makes it worth it. Absolutely. And you don't lament. You rejoice knowing that, as you said so eloquently, that you're letting go of the external and looking more of the internal, the spiritual. You know, you're looking inwardly for the answers.
One of the things in Jamaica, one of the things we talk about is that, and I'm sure it's just in culture, in human culture, that couples who have been married together for a while look like each other. So it's not just that their union creates a likeness in their children, but that union also creates a likeness in themselves as well.
Absolutely.
A transformation to a singularity. And I've always said that, you know, when people separate because of divorce, right, and the song has been, the composition has been messed up, one of the things that causes the reverberations of negative is the fact that the identity is split, that both
right.
persons had an identity in a singularity. That it's not intellectual. It is not an intellectual statement. Oh, we were together, so we have things in common. No, literally, you were together.
That's
the intellectual
right. yes.
process of severing it, say, your divorce, doesn't change togetherness. And that's
right.
the essence of the composition, that it is divine. Relationships should always be divine, even if it's expressed in our physicality, you know. And it is the balance of the composition, you know. It is truly the balance of the composition, you know.
That is
whether the man be the harmony or the woman be the melody. Pressing forward.
Right, right. It's the composition, and if even when you split, oh my goodness! Of course, I mean, we live in a society now that is accepting of all things. You know, we say let people do whatever they want to do, but that's not what God says. God doesn't say do whatever
True.
You want to. There are laws and there are regulations. You can't ride the subway here in New York City and play music loudly, or you can't do certain things. There are rules and regulations, and God has rules and regulations. And I think we've gotten to a place where
yes.
we have gotten away from listening to God and letting God, you know, lead the behavior. We're leading it with external love and external value for things that are perishing, like we're perishing daily. But we don't
yes.
think so because we look at our natural face in the mirror and we go, well, I still look pretty good. Well, pretty good. It doesn't. You don't look. You know, at 21, you don't look, you know, at 41, you don't look 21. And at 61, you won't look 41. So the Creator is calling
True.
You in, he's calling you in gradually, and he's giving you time to get your mind in the right place. And the Bible says, let the mind that is in me be in you. So God is one, he wants you to have his mind. He wants you to address your wife as he would address your wife. How would God address your
yes.
wife if he were upset with her? How would he speak to her? How would he love her? How would he make amends? How would he, you know, and speak to keep peace in the house. So we've gotten more into a sense where we're looking at the way society says to do it. We're watching reality shows and we're listening to what the president might say. We're listening to what this person might say. And we're gaining, well, it's validation from the wrong source, because you can't draw a source from an empty, you know, water from an empty well. And if the person is not spiritually
Absolutely.
Sound or discerning, then information that you're getting from them can't be clean. It cannot be pure. But we're in a place where we say, well, we're afraid of hurting each other's feelings, but we would rather offend God than offend each other. But I would say, Brother Jerome, and Brother Don, if I am walking in the wrong direction, whether it be in my marriage or in my parenting or in my dealings with other people, please redirect me, because if the Spirit of God lives in you and you're giving me the right information, then I go the right way. If not, you send me to hell, and it's not anyone's fault but the person that knows and not telling the other person. My marriage is 18 years, and I'm the only one of my siblings that's married. And the rest of them have children, and they have different things. And not to condemn anybody for doing what they do. I mean, that's their life. But I believe that once you begin the process of creating children, then you have to complete it. Even if you started, I mean, some people say, well, of course, don't make children without being married. And I did it, but I consummated my relationship spiritually as well. And it took some time. I was a little bit, ignorant and immature, but I got there. And I think it's the best. It is the best thing for my children. Beautiful. It's the best thing for my wife. And it's the best thing for me, that I realize that you understand that you're a servant in that relationship, and not in a menial way, but in a very powerful way.
So, absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
Robert, I don't want to interrupt, but it's 12 o'clock. I don't know if you can stay on. That's beautiful. If you have to go,
I'll stay.
I think.
No, I.
Okay, listen.
Yes.
Jerome, you don't mind, do you?
No. We're flowing, brother.
Gentlemen, can I interject? Because I'm a little bit. I got a couple more white hairs than both of you together, I think. Although, I married 29 years, this past Shabbat, my wife and I had a wonderful experience.
Once again,
it was the first time.
Congratulations! Yeah.
Thank you. So we had an experience that we didn't look forward to, and my mother warned me about it because my mother experienced it many years before I. I don't know if you gentlemen are familiar with the term the empty nest or the empty nest syndrome, where the husband and wife, the children are out of the house.
Children go away.
Now,
go away from home.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I have a daughter out in Chicago, which is about 700 plus miles away. I have a son now learning, thank God, in a wonderful rabbinical college in New Jersey. It's called the Rabbinical College of America in Morristown, New Jersey. I had a daughter who went away with her classmates to Muncie, New York. So it's been hard on us that my first daughter, thank God she got married. She married a very nice young man. But, it's harder on the wife than the husband, because I see it as the bigger picture. They're part of also the community of Israel, and eventually, hopefully, they will fulfill in the way they'll be blessed to be fruitful and multiply, and we'll have grandchildren. But now that my son now is off on his way to college, and I have a daughter who in a year from now will graduate, so we went to the Shabbos, and my wife and I went back. Is almost we went back 29 years to the beginning of our relationship.
Mm.
Like I, the first time we met, I reviewed some things with her, and at that time I had earlocks, which they call peyote, and I asked her when I first met her. I said, "Do you like them?" And she said, "No." Eventually, I cut them off before the wedding, and I said, "What about?" And I said, "I still don't like them." And I served. She cooked. I served at the dinner. I cleared the table, which usually was the job of my younger son. And I spoke to him before the Shabbat. I said, "Yosef, I'm cleaning the table. I'm taking out the garbage. You better learn, study hard, man, because I'm doing your job. Because the work's waiting for you. So you learn as much as you want." And my younger daughter. My younger daughter, I wished her well for the Shabbat, and my oldest daughter spoke after Shabbat. But, gentlemen, it was a wonderful experience. And why was it a wonderful experience? The next morning, we both went to our local congregation, which one day, Robert, I'll take, Robert is a neighbor of mine, Jerome Sage. One day I'll take you in there, and we can learn in there, and you can meet some of my friends. And every, gentlemen, every Shabbat, every Sabbath, without exception, after we finish our prayers, We make a little communal meal. It's called in Yiddish Fabringen, and in Hebrew it's called Hizvadut. Basically, it's like a socially sanctioned form of group therapy, but we don't call it group therapy because it's therapeutic. We eat, we drink, we tell stories, we speak Torah, and we sing a cappella.
Mm.
And
yes.
And my wife enjoyed it to the extent, it was almost, I'm telling you, gentlemen, it was like going back 29 years in time. And what came out of that Shabbat, as we were, we broke away and we started Saturday night after the Shabbat, she said, "Let's do it again next week." So I think we got off to a nice transition for the empty nest. Well, no, my daughter will be back. She'll be with us, God willing, this coming Shabbat. And then hopefully my son will come once a month. So I'm just telling you, it's people, and you know, it goes back to what you said before, Robert, you know, that how many people, while they're congratulating the newlyweds, are not thinking how to renew and make new every moment their ongoing relationship with the other half of their soul, because man and woman are really one entity.
Yes.
So I'm saying, you're taking these matters.
Oh, beautiful. I mean, Brother Dan, you're, you know, sharing of your experiences, you know, as I listen to them here, have always inspired me. As a matter of fact, you know, when I hear you speak about the circle, you know, like when I hear you speak about, you know, singing and cooking together on the Shabbat, after the Shabbat, the essence of that is like a circle came into my mind. And I saw the different notes that is being played. You know, I saw that each person was literally playing their part in the greater composition of the family. And I've often argued several times on my channel, and here, that the family is really the house of Yah, right here in this cosmos, in this reality. That's where his full presence dwells, right? And so, you know, as we really relate again music and family and the essence of devotion as the essence of sacredness between man and woman, the one entity that is unified in spirit, right? And from the unification of spirit and form comes the offspring. That is the creative process. Listen, that is the creative process. That's the very essence of creation, of life. He who has blessed us to have the knowledge replicated in how we treat each other, you know. And so the essence of understanding what really harmonizes a man and woman and the family, and when you've been together, to the offspring are so grown that they move on from that physical experience of family to start or to continue the essence, the heritage, the lineage, a family. So in essence, it's like it's the banana plant that has, each time one has reached the maturity, there are shoots to continue, because you're going to cut that tree down, that plant down. But the new shoots are there to continue. Continuity is so, it never ends. It really continues. And then soon, as what we say in Jamaica, the cycle comes back around. So guess what, Brother Dan? When the grandkids fill the home again, you become brand new parents once again. That's what happens.
Yes. Well, you know, gentlemen,
I'll take that as a blessing, Drum Sage. Thank you, Robert.
I'm so enjoying this conversation. Listening to, I mean, you both are such eloquent speakers and great thinkers. Brother Don, I've heard you on several occasions. Brother Jerome, what a delight and treat it is to hear you today. But my family is from Jamaica, so.
Respect and honor.
Yeah, I'm born here, but my mother, my grandmother, grandfather, they're from Jamaica, so they migrated here in the early 60s, and everyone came, and, you know, here I am, thank God, you know, enjoying some of the fruits of what it means to be in this country. But as you said, as you both said, you know, I mean, well, Brother Don, let's go back to the empty nest conversation. You know, I have five children. I have 27, 24, 2019 and almost 17 now. My 27-year-old is married. You know, I performed the wedding. He's off, lives in another state. My two daughters have moved out and started their lives on their own. They were ready to go. And so my 24-year-old son moved out. He came back home, and he's about to be a dad in another few days. I'll be my first grandchild.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Congratulations,
Yes.
Daddy all over again.
Yes, as you said, it's coming. And then, you know, my youngest son is 17, who I considered my baby for many years, you know, and it is difficult watching them grow up and leave, because the energy in the house is changing. The holidays, I mean, I'm a very hands-on father and husband. I mean, from buying, you know, a Christmas tree to Christmas shopping to cleaning the house for the holidays to every parent-teacher meeting, When my kids had any issues in school, my wife, she didn't have to go, I would go. I mean, I was extremely involved in my children's lives, and that was a big, very big part of who I became.
Wonderful.
Less of an artist, but more of a father in some respect. I focused on that, and now that it's not there anymore, it is difficult sometimes to, you know, even to look and say, wow, the place is really quiet, honey. You know, and it's some people wish. I hear people say, I can't wait for my kids to grow up and go. And I have never felt that way. I have never wanted the process to be rushed. I never felt like I wanted it to be over. In fact, I said, God, I said, you know, if you, if you so desire, give me a house big enough that could house my entire family, and we could all live together and grow together. And not that I would want to be in their way, but just enjoy them for as long as possible. And you know, they have their own experiences, but I would be available to them and them to me, you know, as often as possible, because it is the most precious thing you have in life is your family, really.
Yes.
And
for real.
So we don't take stock. But we don't take stock in it. I mean, we, again, you know, just to go back a moment, we live in a society where, especially here in Brooklyn, you know, I observe mothers who, you know, scream at their kids in the street or talk down to their kids or they just don't understand the value of what the parenting dynamic should be. And fathers also, some who are, you know, trying, but some who are not trying. And if we're going to speak about the good, we must speak about the negative, meaning that some just don't really understand or want the job that they've been assigned to do. And so, you know, we understand how important it is and how much value there is in our presence. And so when we do a good job, as you've done, Brother Don, and your children have grown up and they're doing amazing things, rather than, you know, lamenting, which is difficult not to do because you miss them, but they're still available, but not as much, to be very proud of yourself. Be proud of what you've done. 18 years of commitment it can be an arduous task, but you did it with excellence, and your children are proof of that. So whenever you get lonely or feel away, say, you know, God, I did what you told me to do, and I hope you're pleased. Well, you look at your children, of course, God is smiling because, you know, look at what they're doing. You can have nothing but great things to say about them. And
Robert, can I make one comment? And this is boasting. I'm not trying to – I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
And I testify before Heaven, Earth, and Jerome Sage. I ask you to please share this message with, you know, brother and sisters in Jamaica. I never feel alone because I sense the Almighty – not from some sort of elitist, pristine spiritual perspective, because I heard from a very righteous man, you are never alone in the world. You might be in the desert, you might be in the city, you might be in a room full of people, you are never alone because the glory of the Most High fills the earth. So I'll be honest with you, I might miss my children, but
right.
In terms of I am not inclined to feel lonely. I'd say oh my gosh, a good almost 25, 28 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not at some level that I'm just telling you, I heard it from a very, he said, you are never alone in the Creator's creation.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. It's a part of, you know, the essence of what life is. The external is the forms and the different multifunctions, right? And this notion of separateness can be seen. But in the true essence, the more we become spiritual, then the inner, where the spirit is one, that's what becomes the very essence of life. The more the man and the woman is harmonized, then that is why marriage becomes easier after, I guess, we let go of the divergence of externality, right? After we let that go, then that's where marriage really begins, because if one cannot sacrifice oneself for even the singular good, which is, you know, your other half, then it's going to be quite difficult to do it in the greater context for your children and for your family and for the greater family in terms of the community. Because one of the things is, you know, you see, people always say, well, you know, I do love my kids. But when I listen to that, there's no judgment. I'm just saying sometimes you look at it, they say, I love my kids. But what they're really doing is appeasing a fear of discipline in their children. Right? It's a weakness that's been handed over from the images. Can you mention about how your father wasn't there in a certain context before? And it's like we hand over sometimes this negativity, right? And that way of how we think, you know, what we expect, you know, in relationships. So if we just like, there has to be this sort of a undoing of a lot of that. And I guess the process of what we are doing, right, is helping the process of undoing a lot of what that separation has caused, what the way of thinking has caused in terms of disharmonizing male and female, breaking the energy apart, because we are so caught up on the forms and the multifunction. We don't see the formless. We don't see the harmony of spirit. And that space is where identity is. That's where Yah is. That's where Yahuwah is present in that space. Now, once we can return, you know, in our context of that space, that place of being, how we empower ourselves as males, you know, to how we empower the women, to how the women empower us, that when the family and the offspring And marriage comes, like I said, the identity when one lets go of the fear, right, and the worries. And then you know that this is your other half. You realize that this is the truth of human life, you know. It is a blessing, God. I mean, to hear you speak, both of you, about marriage, I mean, and I know where my thinking is, that I'm getting to a place where I want to now have that harmonization, right? So I'm trying to play the right note, you know, and I'm hoping my other half, that she understands, and she's also trying to play the right note so we can get to the right composition and arrangement for love, you know. So blessings, brothers, your marriage, your life, your sharing, your family. It's all inspirational. I'm the Juno one here, right? I'm the one without marriage here. So I'm the other. I heard y'all talking. I'm like, yeah, I know, you know. But, you know, I'm just going to listen because I need to learn.
But you are wise.
I'm very honest, brother Rob.
You are wise beyond your years. I won't ask you how old you are. That's, you know, but it's not important. But you are, if you are the junior member in this partnership, you are definitely wise beyond your years. And I mean, and the way you understand and the way you explain things is crystal clear, crystal, and eloquent. And it's a pleasure to listen to you speak.
Majestic, said, brother, and it's a pleasure listening to you as well.
Yeah, what you said a moment ago, just go back to it for a moment, about disciplining, and you are absolutely right. I'm gonna say to you that there are moments in my parenting when I just I parented from a place of weakness. I have to admit it. I'm going to admit it openly. Trying my best not to somehow upset my children, or even when I knew it was for their good, because I felt somehow or another that by not disciplining them or not chastising them when they absolutely needed it, that I was somehow not becoming like my father, or I was more present than my father. When the fact of the matter is that the more the Bible says, you know, you spare the rod and spoil the child. You know, who the
Absolutely.
Lord loves, he chastens. And you must get to a place where if you want them to be powerful men and powerful women, you have to set boundaries and set standards and say no and yes, and whatever, you know, methods you use to discipline your children must be put in place so they have a realistic view of what it means to have not limitations in terms of what they can accomplish, but, you know, boundaries in terms of respect and you know, just understanding. So there were moments when my, you know, especially one of my sons, he gave me a little rough ride at some point, and I was really hard pressed to let him have it, you know. But I said, God, why am I, you know? And he says, well, because you're trying to prove to your children that you can do what you know, raise them without doing what you know, and I'm, you know, without being tough, and it doesn't work.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't work. You know, my mother was a disciplinarian, and like, you know, being from Jamaica, like I said, she didn't play games. You know, she said something one time. The next time,
I know Jamaica probably.
Yes, she didn't mix her words. She played mother, father, brother, counselor, and if she has to let you have it, she lets you have it. God bless her. She was an amazing, and still is an amazing mother. She's still here. Thank you, God. And she did not mix words. She did not try to appease me in any type of way. She said, "I'm not your friend. I'm your mom, and I'm here to raise you and guide you." And she said, I can't raise you being like you. I said, wow.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you're
that's
you're
a good mother right there.
Yeah.
Don't let my mom right there.
Yeah. And you said, I mean, you hit it right on the head, you know, Brother Jerome. I think a lot of what I see in my community is a lot of folks just relinquishing their parental duties and their, you know, spiritual duties to society and saying, well, I give up. I don't feel like doing it anymore. Whatever happens, happens, and I'll just, you know, we'll give it to the school teacher, or we'll give it to the rabbi, we'll give it to the
passing
the pastor.
The responsibility on.
We'll pass it on, and then when it doesn't come out right, I say, well, they went to temple, or they went to church, they went to school, but what did they do at home?
To me, Robert, it's like blaming society. It's like I see in Jamaica. It is a blaming the society syndrome. They really want to say, well, you know, the rabbi failed. The pastor failed, you know, Rastaman failed, Jerome failed, you know.
Right.
You know, but the essence of it is that your children, our children, become who we are, right?
Yes.
And who we are is not just these bones and stuff that we've been trying to explain. It's the discipline, the moral, ethical constructs, whether it's rooted in faith or it's rooted in our material ambitions or outward desires. That's what our children become. So if you are, let's use the word pious, just for the sense of not to appease, but just to be. Piousness, piety, right, would then suggest your children would have this nature, because what they would see is not something ostentatious, but something authentic to the essence of who you are, what you represent.
Right.
If that nature could then be transmuted over and over and over and over, what God has said to me in communion is that that is what we call tradition. So when I got what tradition is from God, not from a context outside what we construct, he said to me, tradition is family. It's the original place, because that's where his presence dwells. So literally, mm-hmm. if you ain't having the family in the construct of the mental and emotional, you're out of sync. So we cannot just give the children things. You can't just give them gifts to appease a fear we have, because, oh, you know, our parents are this and our parents are that, and we don't want our kids to be like that. When we are suffering them the knowledge they need to actualize as pious, loving,
yes.
beautiful, wonderful children, because that's what we want, you know?
Right.
Because we
right.
have to be that also.
Yes, yes. You know, it's interesting. When I was a child, I could not enter the room when they were adults in the room. If my parents had company, we knew we were not supposed to be in the same space. We didn't
wow.
peek into the room. We didn't go, Mommy, can I? Like, she said, you know, before company comes over, make sure you, whatever you want to eat or drink, you've already done, whatever you need to do. Because, you know, unless there's an emergency, you know, you're not in an adult space. We were not allowed in the room during adult conversation. My mom didn't discuss certain things with me. My dad didn't discuss, you know, certain things with me beyond what he did. I mean, he told me some stuff, like I mentioned earlier, about him leaving. But I'm talking about if they were just in the room having a conversation or people were in the house, we knew our place. And, you know, it seems to me, you know, I mean, a lot of what you just said, you know, is completely on the money. Just, you know, riding public transportation, listening to the voices of our children who are brilliant but don't know how brilliant they are, and they've just, some have gone astray, not because they don't have the power, but they're not being taught based on what you just said, because we're giving them control when they don't understand what control means. They have
Absolutely.
To be taught. They have to be taught. And if you are just handing over the keys to someone who's not going to take care of the building's going to fall apart. So it's strange that we do that, but I had to ask myself, I said, well, is it by design? Is it what we're tempered to do based on, you know, I don't know anymore. I mean, sometimes I look at it and I have to ask God, well, show me exactly why this is happening the way it's happening. Because it seems a bit confusing sometimes.
Can I chime
Truly.
In, gentlemen? I'd like to share you a teaching from the 5th Lubavitcher Rebbe, Shalom Dov Ber, who lived from 1859 and 1860, went to the next level of life in 1920. He said it is an obligation, just like it's an obligation for a Jewish person to say to keep the Shabbat or eat kosher or do other precepts, it is an obligation on a parent, and particularly the male, to meditate a half hour a day. What can he do to improve the education of a child, of his children? Meaning there are really no empty moments in the space of a 24-hour day for someone who serves God. And this is not just going for Jews. This is if we meditate, how can
Beautiful.
I make things more conducive towards the proper nurturing of our children? And I know someone who has 10 children. He said to me, Don, I've done it. It works. Take that advice. I can't say I fulfilled it to the great, but I'm trying to do it more and more. It's not. It means you have to keep your mind active. Jerome Sage, your take on these matters.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, the education of the child is a preservation of the lineage, of the bloodline. The daughter has to carry forward the dictates, discipline, and the very essence and functionality of mother and father to actually have an effective household for her offsprings to be properly reared, right? To be properly groomed, to be properly grown. So, in fact, if she doesn't have that experience, it's kind of hard for her to offer that to her husband, right, and to his family in the unified family space, right, and to our children that come after, right? So the very essence of it, when I think about it, is that how you really educate your children, you know, is impinging on who you are as a person. That means, remember, if we come out of the context of, like, books and acquired knowledge in the outside world, then we'll miss some people, because remember, some people don't have always the context and the access to all of that kind of information that is recorded in these repository. So the essence of the self-knowledge, how a person is morally, ethically, right and wrong, is a standard of just human life. Now, when a parent understands that they want the best for their children, is to understand how you are as a parent, as a person, right? If you're dishonest, you cannot teach your children about honesty, because they will see the dishonest way and be double-minded.
Mm-hmm.
You see, it's just what it is. So you have to just understand in that context, it's about how you are as a person. And those are the core values the child inherits through the DNA, both male and female. They inherit that from the parents, right? And the socialization of the same DNA, right? And in that socialization is where the real strength is actualized, because it was in concept before, and now they're seeing manifestations of it. Meaning the genes knew it from the parent genes, right? And now they're seeing it. It's being reinforced.
Yeah.
It's being reinforced. You're a cheater. You're a liar. You're a twister. Your kids are no manifestations of that. And then they're seeing it functionally in the environment. How else can they be? It's double-minded to tell them, you need to do this, you need to do this. What are you talking about? You've got it crooked. So it comes back to us. The children bear no responsibility. They are the image of us, you know. So empowering man to empower woman, empowering woman to empower man. It's just to realize that we need to harmonize our faith points to that, you know, and find the right keys, the right chords, you know what I mean? Get past the external, and we can have a beautiful life, you know what I mean? Blessings and love.
Brother, I'm sorry.
No, I'm saying, Robert, your comment will be the last thing we're going to. But believe it or not, we've come to almost an hour of program, which is I hope this will be the first of many collaborations between the three of us. So you have the last word for today's program.
Oh, well, I mean, I was going to ask Brother Jerome a question, but I'll save it for the next time. What I want to say is, yeah, I mean, I'm completely inspired today just listening to you guys speak. What I want to say is, in closing, is that we have the power through Yeshua to do many things. And I think if we relent the power to the understanding of the world, as Brother Jerome said, then we are doing ourselves a disservice. And as you've said, Brother Don, a moment ago as well, that you never feel alone because the power of God always with you. I mean, it's not an arrogant statement. It's not a haughty statement. I feel exactly the same way. And listening to Brother Jerome speak, I think he feels the same way as well. If you didn't feel it and understand it, you wouldn't be able to express your feelings the way you do, both of you. So I think that's a shared synergy between the three of us. I no matter what happens with me, if I have a loaf of bread in the refrigerator or half a spoon of butter or no cheese or there's just a day's worth of dinner, the Bible says, you know, my grace is sufficient for the day. I'm never sad, really. I don't really feel down often. I always feel inspired and uplifted just knowing that God is with me. I always feel his presence. I believe him and I trust him. Brother Don said something to me a few weeks ago, and I was on a job, and I was having a bit of a rough day. I was just tired and I was working. I didn't want to be working. And Brother Don said to me, I talked about having faith, and Brother Don said, well, you know, you have to know God to believe God, something along those lines you mentioned to me. And I meditated on it almost every single day, and I shared it with other people. And so when people talk about faith, says, well, how can you have faith in something that you don't know or someone you don't know?
Amen.
So when you know the Creator and when you know him, then you can say, you know, he's with you. That's how you know. And you know that he can't be wrong. He can't lie. So all of what you're experiencing is a component of what his plan is for you. And if you trust him, he'll lead you through it with peace. Yea, though I walk through the valley, I will fear nothing because I know that he's with me. And eventually, you know, he brings all of his promises to pass. It's been a delight speaking with you, gentlemen. I hope to be on with you again at some other point in the near future, and to learn.
Absolutely, brother.
I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot today. As much as I think I've shared, I think I've learned more than I've shared. So, Brother Don, Brother Jerome, thank you so much.
Vice versa. Robert,
thank you very much, Robert.
Thank you,
Robert. And then I'll turn to Jerome as well. Robert, how can people connect to you on Facebook or any other medium, and how can they connect to see your wonderful website, which displays all your wonderful graphic arts and all different types of artistic endeavors?
Okay, well, my website is very simple. It's robwalkerbrand.com. robwalkerbrand.com. And my Instagram page is just a dude from Brooklyn. And there's an underscore between each word. Just a dude from Brooklyn. Underscore between each word. My phone number is there as well, and my email address on my website as well. Reach out, and that's it. Yeah.
Thank you, Drum Sage. How can the blessed souls around the world that are listening to our program catch a vibe from you or catch a fire?
Blessings once again, Brother Dan, Brother Rob. It's been an interesting and beautiful experience. I've learned a lot too as well, so it's been a joy for me. Well, you know, the people can, you know, find some of the vlogs, the videos on the channel, Sela Media, and that is S-E-A-L-A-M-E-D-I-A, that's Sela Media, and that's on YouTube, and Trail Life Television Network, and that's my personal channel, and Trail Life is T-R-E-E-A-L-I-F-E, it's Patois, Trail Life Television Network. Or you can email me at Jerome, J-S-B Sage, sorry, that is J-S-B SAGE JSBSAGE@gmail.com. Right? And you know, we can always, you know, hold our reasoning, hold our conversation. Blessings once again. Love.
Beautiful.
Amen.
Again, I'd like to thank Robert Walker and Drum Sage and Robert Walker, Drum Sage Butler, that is. This is Angel C. Goodman, your local international cyberspace, Tara Askan, Tara Activist, cyberspace librarian. We're going to segue out of today's program with a wonderful uplifting song called Hineni, which was the expression that was used by our father Abraham when the Almighty called out to him. Hineni means here I am to serve you. And this is sung by Mordechai Ben David, who's been performing publicly for the past 50 years. It's a song which starts from a dark place but winds up in a wonderful place, where the listener is encouraged to go out of their own spiritual darkness and come into the light of knowing that every one of us are faithful stewards. We just haven't realized it. Many people are in pre-contemplation stage of being a faithful steward because we are all put on this earth to make it a sustainable place. And may this happen away. One love, girl, one destiny, kolana, full of the dark, and I'm darky, shalom, pleasant, peaceful way. And I have to remind everyone before anything else, and I'll remind myself as well, I've got to be good. We've all got to be good because the Tevatov, the Hativ, the nature to do good, the Creator is the source of our goodness, waits ever so patiently for us to activate that goodness. Take care, everyone.
our father Abraham was called by God to sacrifice his son. With the cry of Hineni, deed was done. Now what will become of our father's devotion if we won't say Hineni in our every motion? So my brother, put your faith